Humans and animals have coexisted for centuries, but a new book looks to explore ways we could make our environment a bit more friendly for animals. Ron Broglio is a professor at ASU and director of the Desert Humanities Initiative there, where he works on the relationship between the natural environment and human culture. His new book is called Animal Revolution, and when I spoke with him earlier, I asked him about the focus of his book, which seems to be about finding ways for humans and animals to get along and for us to maybe understand them a bit better.
Yes, that's it. The animals are out there. They're doing their animal things. Us humans are over here in our world doing our things. And oftentimes, there's no problem. We all do our stuff and it's not an issue. But then occasionally, these two worlds collide. And either it's not so good for the animals or it's not so good for humans. And so how can we make a more generous space where humans and animals share the same earth?
In terms of those instances when the two worlds collide, it seems as though we saw more of that, especially earlier on in the pandemic when people were not out and about as much. They were staying home more. And it seemed in some cases that animals recognized they had more free rein of areas.
Right. You know, I always said in the revolution, the animals are very patient. They will eventually, they've got time, maybe not in one generation or two, but over time. Things will happen for them. We saw that also at the Chernobyl nuclear site. The site was evacuated by humans, and so wildlife just flourished, and things that they didn't know existed or hadn't existed in a long time just came back. So when humans don't weigh on the earth in the same way, it leaves space for other animals.
So understanding that incidents like that, thankfully, are rare, where people have to evacuate for some kind of reason, a particular area, or, you know, as we talked about earlier on the pandemic, when a lot of people were staying at home, understanding that those instances are not the norm, what are some ways where we can maybe go about our day-to-day lives and maybe leave space for animals to be doing their animal thing?
Yeah, it's great. Part of this is the architecture of the cities we're in. So it becomes a question of how can we create open spaces, many cities call them green spaces, here it's desert spaces, that account for the animals. And as we build into their environment with the expansion of the city, how can we make room for animal well-being? And often people build into the desert areas because they want to be closer to nature, right? So if we can allow for that architecturally, we can then allow for the possibility of engagement and interaction. The other thing is that urban animals really thrive on the density of calories here in our city space. So for some animals, the city works out really well, as you may have noticed. And so for those animals, it's simply allowing them to do their animal thing, right?
Well, it sounds like it's not just about leaving green space, leaving open space, but about when and where we do build, doing it in a way that is conscious of what else is around us.
Right. Animals don't always think the way we do. And so a lot of the book is saying, hey, we're thinking one way, but they might be thinking otherwise. So an example of that is birds running into cars and running into skyscrapers. They don't know it's a window, right? They don't understand how windows work. And in fact, they've done a 30-year study on sparrows, urban sparrows, and their wingspan is significantly shorter than sparrows in non-urban spaces. So the wings have gotten shorter over time so that they can more effectively dodge windows.
Huh.
Right? The ones with long wingspans, they don't survive. So we provide a certain pressure on the ecosystem. We're like the Darwinian force that is causing evolutionary change. And so to recognize that and to account for the needs of these other animals.
Well, so how do we try to do that? I mean, you talked about birds, you know, flying into windows, not realizing that it's a window. Like when we are looking to build something, how do we try to take into account how animals might perceive what's there?
Right. So in the case of birds, there are often you'll see these small stickers on windows. They're also beginning to create windows that look transparent to us, but the birds can see small marks in the window. Right now, those are in developmental phases, so they're not probably economic for large buildings, but they will be eventually. So we're beginning to learn and think about how the animal sees the world. Other things might be questions of pesticides or bioinvasive species. When we put particular bioinvasive species into the environment, it affects the whole of the system. So being aware of the kinds of things we're placing within the natural environment.
Does that apply to other animals as well? I'm thinking about, you know, animals, especially around the valley, you know, dodging cars, you know, roadrunners and quail and other kinds of animals that are constantly rabbits dodging people, dodging other moving vehicles.
Okay, here's a good one for you. There's an artist in New York who created a small tube for cockroaches and other insects to cross across the street.
Ah.
And what's interesting about that is it makes us recognize, as you said, that our highway of progress might lead to the death of some animals. So how can we build or be aware of these other animals and maybe make tunnels and spaces, etc.? I know in a lot of large wildlife areas, they have these wildlife tunnels that allow the animals to move under the highways or around the highways.
How much of this is a result of people's desire, and you alluded to this earlier, to live closer to nature, to maybe push out further and further from the city center or from, you know, the areas that are developed now into areas that, you know, until very recently maybe were dominated by animals?
No, absolutely. We all want to be fascinated and enjoy the wonders of nature, but sometimes that can come at an expense for the animals. So one of the things I try to encourage people to do is enjoy the nature that's around you, even in urban settings. So spending time watching and observing is a way to really engage with nature and begin to learn the names of things, learn the names of the plants and the names of the different types of birds or the bird calls or the different animals. This becomes a way for us to activate our own wonder about their worlds.
All right, that is Ron Broglio, director of the Desert Humanities Initiative at ASU, also author of the book Animal Revolution. Ron, thanks for the conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you.